Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today, I'm talking to one of the hottest tickers to magic right now. Now, this is somebody who in the last couple of years is literally everywhere. You can't turn somewhere without seeing this person at a magic convention, bringing out a new product. And when I say bringing out new products, always number one bestseller every single time. He has the touch. He has the commercial touch, and everybody wants what this person is bringing out. And for good reason. He's an incredible creator, great magician, great performer, and somebody I'm looking forward to interviewing, the one and only Mr. Ian Bailey. How you doing, Ian?
Hello. Yeah, good, thank you. Good. That was quite an introduction, wasn't it? I don't know how true it is, but it's, it's something. I appreciate it.
You are everywhere. I remember you coming on my radar, really, when Peter Nardi turned around to me and said, have you heard of Ian Bailey? And I'm like, no, not really. He's like, oh, let me show you a trailer. And he showed me the Made to Measure trailer. I was like, that's great. And then since there, every convention I've been to, you're there. Normally with a huge round of people, a huge circle of people around you, and you're just settling and showing them crazy stuff. Every time I look online, there's a new trick by Ian Bailey, which always, like I say, sells it. You genuinely are all over the place. It's great. I mean, you've really made a name for yourself in a very short period of time.
Yeah, I know. Well, thank you. Yeah, because I did have a release with Penguin years ago. And that's where I first met the Christopher, which was Roasted. And so that did well. But I think because it was a download, it was only on Penguin. I don't think it really did much for me in terms of getting my name out there. And then it was during COVID where we finally got, Made for Measure and the Jameson Wallet out, which then kind of got the momentum going. So, yeah, it's been since kind of 2020, around that time, that I've started kind of trying to consistently release a few tricks a year.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk for people who don't know who you are, and I'm sure that there's very few people who don't know who you are at this point, but let's give people a frame of reference and start at the very beginning, like I do with a lot of these interviews. And the first thing I want to ask you, Ian, is your origin story. Where do you come from? How did you get into magic? I mean, we know a little bit because obviously your first release was a tape measure, and Alakazam made a big deal of the fact that you're an electrician as well as a magician. So I know a little bit of your backstory, but not really. So how did you get into magic? How did that all happen?
Yeah, it happened, I think, really, we were channel flicking as a family on a Friday night and came across David Blaine. And I'd seen magicians before, at Scouts and things like that years and years ago. But it was one time, which when I was about 10 or 11, mm-hmm. David Blaine on TV, he put a card through a window and was very chilled about it. You know, he wasn't that amazed with himself. I thought you would be if you could do something of that great power. Found it very confusing that he was so relaxed. And but that one image just stuck with me. And then literally the next day we went into Reading. So I'm based in Bracknell in Berkshire, about mm-hmm. 20, 25 minutes away from Reading. And I remember shopping with my mum. We went to Waterstones and I brought a book on card magic, which was a book by Nick Einhorn. Brilliant.
It's a classic book. I've got it in my library over there. It's a great book.
Yeah, and I at the session a few years ago, got them to sign it, which is a really nice memento. So that was the first kind of thing that I bought. And then it basically happened where I was performing a few tricks to friends at school. And then my friend's brother had dabbled in magic, and he gave me this magazine. I don't know if you ever came across it, a black and white magazine called Magic by Post.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember Magic by Post? I sound like I'm, 50, basically, by this kind of old black and white magazine. But basically, you end up just with a description of a trick, you know, what you get is always a bit of a letdown. But the I just ended up, I think I built a complex for myself where literally every day, whenever the postman was there, I would get butterflies in my stomach because I would know that there's a trick in the post for me. Even to the point where if it didn't come over a weekend, I'd just be furious waiting for Monday or Tuesday for it to finally come. So I had that, and then things just kind of built up, and then the internet, I started buying on there and came across James Friedman.
Was the Man of Steel.
Yeah. So it was Stealing the Show was one of the first DVDs that I bought, and it really got into pickpocketing in a big deal really at school. And so I do pickpocketing at school. I actually ran a tuck shop at school as well. And so I would sell sweets cheaper than Woolworths back in the day. And then I would gamble. I'm not particularly proud of this moment, but I would gamble my earnings from the shop, doing the three card Monty on my arts folder on top of a bin at school, looking around doing, I think I made about £15 in a day once just doing this. And so I got into that. So I got into, a little bit of pickpocketing. I gave that stuff back. I was more honest with that side of things. And then everything just built up. Penguin Magic came along, Alakazam came along, all these different shops came along, got into wedding magic as well, got performing at private parties and things. And what was amazing, and it's still kind of part of my kind of magic testimony in a way, is the fact that James Friedman ended up performing at my wedding 6 years ago. I was going to get him just to kind of perform in between the drinks, you know, the reception drinks. And he said, well, why don't I just host the speeches and I'll do a 20-minute show at the end of the speeches. And so the guy who I learned from at the very beginning ended up doing the act that I kind of, you know, was aspiring to learn at the wedding, which is amazing. He's a very good guy. I owe a lot to James Friedman. But so that's kind of where we are. And then where Penguin was roasted, and that's when the creating started.
Let's break this down and kind of go into a little bit more detail on some of the areas. And the first question I've got to ask you is, are you a full-time pro, or do you do electrical work as well?
I did an apprenticeship, so a four-year apprenticeship in electrical engineering, and that was more in kind of industrial background. So I did Heathrow Airport, Brighton Football Stadium, all these kind of big sites. And then my dad is an electrician, but he kind of does more domestic kind of social housing, that kind of thing. He's had a contract with this one company for about 35 years. He's looking to retire. And so I now work with my dad as this kind of transition happens. So I do work full time, but I'm self-employed. You know, I own my own business with my dad. I'm a partner with that. So I still get a lot of flexibility in terms of if I want to take a gig during the week, you know, I'm not kind of enslaved to that 9 till 5, you know, Monday to Friday thing. So I can move about if I do get a gig. But for me, I do like the balance. I like having my fingers in a lot of pies. I like the fact that there's no pressure on me to have to find a gig. I know I've got the steady wage coming in. And then I just take the gigs I enjoy. Every gig that I do is literally within 30 minutes of my house. And so it's nice to have that occasional gig. And the most important reason why I do it is literally to try out new material that I'm working on. So it's quite nice to have a constant flow of work where you can test some new ideas. But for me, I kind of feel like having the pressure of doing it full time would probably scare me a bit, you know, unless I was working for an agency and I was getting a steady flow of work and things. I kind of like having the fact that I can be in front of, you know, a crowd of people performing the one day, and then I might be doing an electrical test in an empty flat listening to the magic podcast. I like the mix, really.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's great. That's really good. When did you start doing your first gig? Because you said you got into magic as a child, really, waiting for, you know, like things to come through the post. When did you actually start performing? Because that's a question I get on this channel all the time. How do I make the leap to go and do a gig? You know, I'm a keen amateur. I love learning, but I've never gone out and performed professionally.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two answers. There's one that wasn't, yeah, there's, I was basically Ryland's age when I did my first gig. that was cash in hand at a wedding performing for kids whilst the speeches were happening. which actually ended up being a great gig. I had a guy called Phil, who was my friend, who loved magic, never performed it, but he was basically, I paid him money to come along and he passed me the props as I performed. It was great. And then I remember performing for my cousin's birthday. Once again, I was probably about 12 at the time. But then there was that long gap. And then I probably did my first gig when I was about 18, 19 years old. It was like a Christmas party for a church, I think. So that was just a strolling gig. And then, yeah, you just, you know, you get the business cards and you start getting the website and kind of letting it come in. But yeah, so it's probably round about 18, 19 years old when I've had my first gig.
Amazing. And do you do stage shows? Because obviously, and we'll talk about this in a bit, but one of your first big releases was Made to Measure, which I really kind of think of as a stand-up. It's better in a kind of a that sort of environment than close up. But I never hear you talking about.
I've mentioned it on, because when Wondo Blocks came out, I was interviewed on the Penguin Magic podcast. So I got to kind of talk about my stage show then. But I do have a stage show and I do want to do more of it, actually. And it's called Tricks of the Trade, which is quite good. So basically, it is a combination of my electrical background with magic as well, which Measure for Measure, the tape measure trick, really fits in very, very well as a good opener. So a lot of the magic I do is mainly aimed around blending the two. It was a real conflict for me to know whether I lie about what I do for a living and pretend that magic was full time, you know, and I'm the busiest corporate magician in London, or I just be honest and just say, look, I've got a day job, this is what I do, and maybe I get fewer gigs because of that, because people want this kind of big deal coming to the party. But I actually find it has a nice kind of warming effect, actually. I think it makes you, although it kind of makes you like the, dare I say, like an everyman type of person. But I think it's just an interesting mix, and no one else is really doing it. And it just means that I can kind of blend the two. And I can actually, thankfully, kind of use some of my tools from my electrical job for the magic. So it's quite handy.
That sounds amazing. Was it difficult to put together a show like that where it's all based around, you know, a particular theme?
Yeah, I think so. Some of it is. But also some of it is really, you know, like classic magic, but just with, you know, mix. So I think actually the last time we spoke, when I did the Measure for Measure, you know, years back, we mentioned very briefly before the recording about stage magic, and we both do the straitjacket escape, not a straitjacket, the suit jacket escape.
Yeah.
And so for me, I do that with a high-vis jacket, making out it's like a prank pulled on an apprentice years ago, to escape in a limited time. So like you can do that. I do rope magic, which years ago I thought I don't like rope magic. And I think the reason why is I thought it was just weird seeing, especially if they're really dressed up, someone in a tuxedo performing tricks with rope. There was a bit of a conflict there for me. And I think doing it as a tradesman is great.
No, it really is.
Yeah. And what's also handy is I can do things like the chop cup, and I can use a tool belt for my final loads.
Yes.
There's no pocket space required. It's very handy for stuff like that. So, yeah, so there's some tricks that I've kind of created kind of more for the electrical work, but a lot of it is just kind of classics just reworked in that context, and it kind of works well really with that.
That's great. But a big part of what we know you for, and a big part of what you're passionate about, is creating magic. I suppose the question is, how old were you said that your first thing that you did was Penguin. How old were you when you went to Penguin? What made you decide to start creating magic? Did you kind of say, right, I'm going to create a trick? And or did you just come up with it and thought, right, now I'm going to say, how did that whole process come to be that you decided to start creating magic and went to Penguin? How did that all come about?
I think it was probably about 5 years ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Been that long? Yeah. I do remember always having a name to create a trick. You know, it's always, I think, you know, I tried years ago, and there was probably some tricks that I did create, which, you know, obviously never got released, but I was always trying to create magic. And I think really, I think the first trick I actually ever created was Cafe Hero, but that never saw the light of day until a lot later. And Roasted, yeah, I think I showed it to Sean Dunn, and you know, within like 5 minutes, he was on the phone to me. And I think with Penguin, it was one of the, because they had a European site for a while. I don't know if you remember that. They had a base
Penguin UK or something like that.
Yeah. So I ordered loads from Penguin growing up, and you know, it always has kind of like a place in my heart of nostalgia, kind of really growing up with Penguin. So that made me go straight to them in terms of that release, because it's really what I knew. And yeah, they're a great team. I'm really pleased it's worked out, especially with Wondo Glocks as well. So yeah, it was probably about 5 years ago that I finally decided to just give it a go. But that was really through a failed attempt of trying to release Cafe Hero and that kind of falling through. Then, a year later, then coming up with this new idea.
How come it fell through? What? So you tried to release Cafe Hero first, and that was something.
I think I sold, so I made a few units myself. I sold some to Merchant of Magic, actually. Sold quite a few to them, and that was just something that they did in store. And then I think I remember I spoke to a few people. The Christopher was saying that you should do this through the Penguin Partner Program, and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I think Lloyd Barnes was trying to get it to be released for Illusionist. And so both of them together encouraged me to make up like 350 units. So I did that. And then basically what happened, I think it's changed now. And I think this is the reason why they kind of pushed it now. Back in the day, I think the loyalty cards for coffee shops were really only a thing that was particularly known in England. I don't think they used it that much in America. So when I mentioned it to Sean at Penguin, he was kind of thinking, oh, I don't know. Murphy's, I approached them, they weren't sure. And so it just kind of sat, a massive box of like 350 units basically just sat there at home.
Oh, no.
And so it was when I did Roasted that D. Christopher saw me use Cafe Hero along with Roasted, because they worked perfectly together. And then he kind of held that idea in his head. And then when the 1914 came about, I think I was one of the first people he approached, because he knew, A, it's kind of relatively cheap to produce, and he knows it works, and it's kind of like a very well-known effect, basically. A classic of magic, just reworked with the copy things. And so, yeah, so then that came about, and we released it through them. So it was a long journey. So I think if people are thinking of creating a trick, and they've created something, and they get a no, just hold on to it, and you know, it may become something in a few years' time. The timing might not be right for now, but you know, if it's a good idea, it's fine. Just keep hold of it.
That's good. That's good advice. Yeah, that's really good advice. But you bought out Roasted, and then it was several years before something else came out. So I think the next significant thing was the start of your Alakazam releases. Was there a reason? Because I tend to find a lot of people that release a magic trick, they get the bug, don't they? They're like, oh my God, I've released one. Now I'm going to release another one. Now release another one. Kind of like where you are at the moment, where it seems like every couple of months there's a new Ian Bailey trick coming out through various different companies. But we have like a several year gap between Roasted and Made to Measure.
So the story behind that is quite weird, actually. So I remember approaching Peter Nardi maybe back in 2016, 17, 18, maybe. And I had the idea, I brought a wallet. It was a Mont Blanc wallet, and I kind of changed a few elements to it and created a card to wallet. And I loved the idea. And I thought, well, Peter Nardi, Alakazam are great at producing wallets. They were my kind of go-to people. I approached Peter, and I think it was a New Year's Day, actually. And I'd never met him before. It was just on Zoom. And we just kind of chatted about that. He loved the idea. He bought the rights to it. And I sent him my Mont Blanc wallet as a kind of a sample for them to get measurements and kind of, you know, do what needs to be done to make it into a Carter wallet. And then they sent it off to a manufacturer, and basically it got lost. It got lost for like a year. And so no one knew where it was. And finally we got it back. And I think it was just because of that delay, it was just sat on the back burner. And I think he had other projects coming along, rightly so. And so when I came up with Measure for Measure, it was during lockdown. I was working on a on a film studio in Surrey, and I was there for about 2 or 3 years, and I filmed the trick and showed Peter, and once again he was on the phone and he went for it, and I said, well, you know, if we do this, could we get back from the dead the Jameson wallet and release them both together? And that was, yeah, that's what happened. So it meant that the Jameson wallet came out and Measure for Measure finally came out. And yeah, that's kind of how it worked. So that's why I ended up with that kind of momentum of two tricks together. It's because there probably was a steady gap between them. It's just the way things happen. And it kind of makes sense once you've got one trick out and people know relatively who you are, then they know that they can, you know, get the next thing. So that's why you didn't hear anything from me for that period of time. And then suddenly, you know, Alexam came out. So,
and then obviously on the back of that, you had Cafe Hero come out through the 1914.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a great trick. Fantastic trick.
The design work changed for that. So I made it look like a traditional kind of coffee card, you know, like a coffee brand that I knew. And then Dee approached it, and he added that great kind of mind reading trick at the end. So he completely redesigned it. He brought in loads of new features, and put this final mind reading force, you know, drink force on the back, and that just took it to a three phase routine with a nice kicker ending. And because of that, it works really well with roasted as well. And yeah, so that's kind of how that finally came about. And so it was quite nice that it had a mind reading element, because I know Dee Christopher's brand is more aimed towards the mind reader. They've got a few kind of coin tricks and things like that. But it was able to kind of make it step over into not just magic, but now a mind reading trick.
Fantastic. That's great. And then you went back to Penguin with the Lego trick, which is probably my favorite thing that you've released. I love that. I think it just looks...
Yeah,
it's so visual.
Yeah, I remember I was obsessed with, because I, being an electrician, I had a bolt, like a steel bolt, and I put 4 steel nuts on this bolt and 1 brass one. So the brass one was at the bottom of the bolt, and I'd be able to show it from all angles, and with just a wave, that brass bolt would go up into the middle, and then another little wave, and then it would go up to the top. And being metal, it was a pain to try and make any gimmicks. Nothing kind of really looked right. I couldn't get a prototype made unless I kind of approached a company. And everything was, I was just stuck on this image of a steel, you know, a brass bolt, a nut going through this kind of stack of nuts. And I remember showing Sean Dunn that at Blackpool, because that was my first ever Blackpool, 2021, I think, or 2020.
Oh, okay, wow, okay. Well, I would have thought you'd have been, wow, okay, that's surprising. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I went to the session for years and years. The first session convention I went to was when Jay Sankey was doing it, and that's where I first heard about this magic convention. I never knew they existed. And so, yeah, I went to the session, and I've been going to the session for years and never braved Blackpool until then. And I love it now. I think it's great. And that's where I met Sean, you know, in person. And we went out for lunch. And I showed him the trick. And he was like, look, it's a good trick. There's potential there. But no one's walking around with nuts and bolts in their pocket like you. All right. You need to change the design. Try and do something with it, you know, with it differently. And I was looking at having, you know, do you remember the fruit polos? I don't know if they still do them. You know, the different color polos?
Yeah. They do them in the States. They do the...
They're big out there.
But I don't think they're around in the UK anymore.
No, I haven't seen them in years. But I was playing, thinking I could do it with those and doing it with those. And then went to Lego. And and I just thought, yeah, okay, I'll get a stack of black Lego bricks and I'll put a white one on the bottom because it's a good contrast there. And I'll try and make that brick float up to the top. And I was playing around, and then suddenly I put another white brick on the top. And that's all it was. And I just suddenly realized, hold on a minute, I've got a magic wand here. And it's such a stupid kind of, you know, it's just those little things that suddenly click, and then it changes the trajectory completely. And so that's when Wando Blocks came around. And so it was all about this kind of, you know, what I love about it is it's not just rising up, it's coming off, it's going back on. You throw it up and try and catch, stab it on the bottom and it ends up in the middle. You know, you can do a lot with that one gimmick. And yeah, what I love about it as well, and I hope this is correct, I think it will sell well for years to come because it's got two things. It's got the iconic magic wand that will always be around for magicians. And it's got these building blocks that have been the most popular toy for years and hopefully will continue to be as well. And so that combination...
One of Simon's favourite tricks of all time.
Yeah, he absolutely loves Lego. And so it's a great thing to combine with a Lego show, as a lot of magicians are kind of heading in that way. It's kind of taking over from the Rubik's Cube now. It's a great trick, and it just means that it's going to be one of those things that will hopefully stick around for a long time. And you're pulling something out of your pocket that everyone knows. They either know Lego or they know a magic wand, and 99% of people know both. And it's great.
And before we talk about any other releases that you've done, one thing that, you know, this is the first time I've actually kind of sat down and thought about a lot of your stuff that you bring out, but a lot of it is very organic. It's kind of like, I know it's that buzzword, isn't it? Now, I don't want to say everyday carry, because who carries around a tape measure? But it's stuff that everybody is aware of. You do, yeah. It's stuff that everyone's aware of. Like, people can relate to a tape measure. The wallet design, the Jameson wallet, looks like a real wallet. Lego is something that people can relate to. A key, which we'll talk about later, is something that people can relate to. Is that, I don't see you doing many card tricks. And even with the card tricks that you have released, like One Card Monty, that ain't a card trick. Like, was this a conscious decision from your point of view where you go, you know what, when I create something, it's going to be something that's not cards, not coins? Because that's what creators, I know I do it, that's the holy grail for a creator, to try and come up with something that's not another card trick, not another coin trick, but instead something that's very different, because then you capture people's attention. You're like, you know, you're doing something with a prop that very few people have done before, and you seem to have an innate ability to be able to do that.
I think really it's probably two things. I think having the electrical background does, you know, you're surrounded by these objects all the time. And so you do end up thinking, oh, I wonder if I could do this or that. So it depends what sphere you're in. If you're only doing card tricks, you're going to think about card tricks. I think if anyone wants to create something with a random thing, you just need to fill your mind with that thing, you know, just get loads of different versions of this item or whatever and just play around with it. But I think, yeah, because I'm in that kind of, you know, that trade, I think that's probably influenced me. But also, well, it's three things, actually. Jay Sankey's influence has been huge on me. Absolutely huge. And you can tell.
A lot of your tricks, and I mean this in the best way, a lot of your tricks are Sankey-esque, especially early Sankey. You know, yes. a lot of the stuff that I see you come up with does have that Sankey vibe to it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's doing tricks with washers. He's doing tricks with nails. He's doing tricks with bolts and things. So I think that, yeah, I think, you know, he's obviously had a big influence and kind of steered me towards that way. And also, Jay Sankey's tricks last less than a minute, you know, like his card tricks especially. And I've never been a lover of, I'm going to write off a large majority of people now, I'm sorry. And the thing is, all those, the long card tricks, the gambling tricks are brilliant for the right audience. There's loads of people who love them. But I just, for some reason, if I'm at a magic convention and someone wants to do like a long card trick where I feel like I'm stuck there for at least 5 minutes, I get restless. I glaze over. I've forgotten the card already. Panic hits me. I'm sweating from worry that I'm going to mess this thing up. I have a very short attention span in general, I think, and that influences my choice of tricks. And I've shown you this card trick that will hopefully come out later this year. It's not even a card. It is a card trick, but it's not.
No, you can't count that as a card trick.
And that is the only card trick I do in my lecture. And like people say, it's kind of like, yeah, it uses cards, but it's still, you know, there's a construction theme to that as well. So yeah, I think it's that combination, short attention span, Jay Sankey, and just my natural kind of, you know, environment with electrical work as well.
Okay. Yeah. I want to talk about your creative process in a minute, but before I do, one other thing, obviously we've just talked about Wonderblocks. And I saw this with Wonderblocks, but I saw it even more with the keyring routine, which recently just came out with Alakazam. You were showcasing in both of those routines your technical ability. Now, up until that point, a lot of the stuff that you brought out was either self-working or required virtually no sleight of hand. Genius routines, but it was really the performer was able to showcase their presentational skills because there wasn't really any moves or anything to worry about. Then you brought out Wonderblocks and you're throwing things up in the air and catching it and doing this and doing that. And then you've got keyring. And I'm like, wow, Ian has chops. Now, I should have thought that you did because you go out and you perform, but I've never seen that showcased in a product before. So what was that a decision that you made? Like, I suppose what I'm trying to say is I know that you've got skills. I'm still struggling to learn keyring. Were you trying to hide that because you thought it's more commercial for your earlier releases to be self-working, like Cafe Hero and this and that and the other? Or was it just like, hey, yeah, what was your, how come all of a sudden we're seeing a different side to you than we saw initially when you burst onto the scene as a creator?
Yeah, I think you just got to do what you've got to do to make the effect work, really. I think that's what it is. I think I've always been led by the effect. I don't really start off with a move. So it's always the effect that comes first. And then, you know, there's certain things that I think, you know, you just, yeah, the more you learn, the more kind of greater a foundation you build. And so when you pick up something, you know, you can do this, that, and the other with, and you know, et cetera. And so I think really with like the tape measure trick, I knew it had certain qualities that allowed me to do a prediction on the tape measure with no moves. Although when I say that, it started off with moves. Mm. And very quickly, as soon as it was released, people were saying, oh, well, you could do this to the tape measure, you could do that. And suddenly it twigged that actually, yeah, you can make one minor adjustment to this tape measure effect, and now it has no moves whatsoever. So if you do see kind of, I think there's been a few reviews on YouTube, and they were saying, oh, it's a bit fiddly with a certain handling. That's now gone because of a couple of the people who purchased it who helped me with that. So yeah, so that already had a bit of a move to it, but now it doesn't. And I think the key ring trick, especially, I think really it was Garrett Thomas watching his Opus routine, which suddenly triggered to me, oh, okay, I could do a lot more with this. Because originally it was just the ring thing move using Greg Wilson's 24 karat fold routine. I love that handling, I love the effects. And to be able to do something like that, but with an actual key, turning it into a key ring, that's what made me then go down that direction. And then, yeah, I think it was just seeing Garrett do this kind of Tai Chi style routine that just looked beautiful. That's what then made me think, right, okay, you need to learn this now, Ian. You need to perfect it and do it. And really, I think the reason why I like it is it's just addictive to do. It's just fun to do. I don't do the full routine to people. I do one phase to people, which is a lot easier. But the actual thing that you see on the trailer was really just showing you what you could do with it. You know, using Garrett's moves, this is what it can look like. So I've always liked sleight of hand. I've always really developed it. I enjoy it. I do a little bit of cardistry, nothing crazy, but I do a little bit of that. And I've always been interested in moves, but not to kind of like the second dealing standard, you know, the bottom deals. I'm not venturing into that avenue. So all of my well, and also Jay Sankey as well. I've perfected the Erdenes color change, a double lift and a something else, and basically realized you can do hundreds of tricks with just those.
Oh, Jay's made a career with the twirl change, the Erdenes change, the yeah. Top move, and yeah, exactly.
That's it. So I think really you just, you know, you can learn a move and you can realize what you can get out of it, which is what Jay's done. But for me, I think I just looked at the effects and did whatever was necessary. And so keyring, Wondo blocks have more of a fiddly, you know, level to them. Mm. but only because it wasn't a conscious decision to kind of venture into the sleight of hand. It was literally, I just had to do this to make the effect happen. So yeah, I'm not shy to do it, but also if you can find an easy way, you may as well do that.
Mm. Very good advice. And let before we carry on talking about stuff, let's talk about your creative process. Because I tend to find that on this channel, I have so many people that want advice on how to perform. How to create magic. You know, there's so many people out there that are wanting to be creators, magical creators, or create magic, whether it be for their own personal use in their own show, whether it be to ultimately market. One thing I've seen with you is that there doesn't seem to be one approach to creating magic. You know, you look at One Card Monty, and it's your variation on Color Monty, but then you look at Wonder Blocks, and it's like nothing I've ever seen before, and it's completely unique. Like, what is your creative process? How do you go from inspiration to the end product?
Difficult to say, isn't it? It's very difficult, but I think just, you know, I remember probably the best advice I could probably give someone, and I occasionally turn to this method. I remember listening to the Illusionist podcast years ago when they had a podcast.
And I remember. That was good.
Yeah. Garrett Clark was interviewed on it, and he said that he had a team of people, you know, obviously the team of he would be together. And on like a plane, because they're always on planes, when they're on a plane somewhere, they would write down on business cards loads of different objects that they carry on them. So their keys, their phone, their wallet, a pen, maybe a credit card, anything. They would just write down the whole list of items that they carry with them. And then on the other set of business cards, they would write down the kind of different rules to magic, you know, like a vanishing, a transposition. I'm only going to be able to name two. So they would write down all of those. What they would then do is mix up the cards, and they would take out one and they go, right, okay, so credit card and penetration. Now you need to do a penetration trick with a credit card. Think about it for a week. And they would then come up the same. And I thought that's a genius idea. So that is something that I do occasionally go to, is think, right, okay, what can I do with this? You know, have those cards, mix them up, and just kind of start creating things. I think also just becoming obsessed with one object as well, I think is quite good. I'm actually, you know, we're talking about the EDC community, where, you know, that kind of term. That's been very, very almost overused now in magic. But there is an EDC community on YouTube, and I'm venturing into it. I may be starting to do a YouTube channel around this, because I am obsessed with pen knives, with little, you know, these kind of little Victorinox pen knives. I'm obsessed with, you know, different types of key rings. You know, this one allows you to take things off easily, all this kind of stuff. So I'm always, and also like a, you know, like these carpenter pencils as well. You know, you just thinking, what can you do with those? And so I'm interested in kind of gimmicky items anyway, and I think that's probably helped me kind of do that with magic. But I think just become obsessed over a specific item that you love, whether that's Lego, whether that's a tape measure, whether that's a pen, just look at what you like to carry on a day-to-day basis, something that you actually love and have a passion for. And then look at those list of rules, you know, what could I do? If I was to vanish something out of this, what would it look like? If I was to make a penetration happen, how would that happen? And just get obsessed with those things. There's been many times where I haven't slept and I've just been laying in bed, just staring at the ceiling, thinking about something. And Measure for Measure came either when I was just about to drift off to sleep or when I was actually asleep. The method came to me, the whole effect came to me. I think you just got to do what you love. If you don't like 10-stage gambling routines, don't try and create one. Just do the stuff that you love and just let it happen, because, you know, it sounds cheesy, but people might feel like they're not an authority in magic, or they're not, you know, they haven't got this. But in a way, I am an authority on being an electrician who has a magic side gig, who lives in Bracknell, who likes EDC products. Like those rules make me who I am, and that helps me then give something to the community that is different to other people. So there's no right way or wrong way. There's not anything that you need to be in love with. You know, you just do what you want to do, get obsessed with it, break it down into nice, easy, bite-sized rules so that you can play around with it, and just keep creating ideas. And don't worry about method to begin with. Just come up with any idea, even if it's crazy and impossible, and then you'll find a way later on. That's probably all I could give you, I think, in terms of a kind of a process as such.
Fantastic. That's really good advice. And, you've now released a lot of magic through Alakazam. You know, we've talked about the Jameson wallet. We've talked about Measure to Measure. Obviously, after that, there was the incredible One Card Monty that I absolutely love. It's my EDC. It's in my wallet. I think it's incredible. And then, obviously, Keyring. You've also bought stuff out through 1914. You know, you've also bought stuff out through Penguin. We'll talk about the fact that you bring your stuff out through yourself in a bit, but are there companies that you haven't worked with that you'd like to work with? Is there, how do you, I suppose that there's two parts to this question. Are there companies that you haven't worked with that you'd like to work with? And how do you decide which company to go for? I get that all the time. How do you decide that this is an Alakazam trick? You've obviously got a relationship with all these different companies. How do you decide that you're going to this company or that company?
Yeah, so there is a company that I got my foot in the door with them about a few years back. I came up with not a trick, but a utility item that could be used for a stage performer that is incredibly practical. And it allows you to have an item that is usually very large that you would have to carry outside of your case. And everything else can pack flat and play big apart from this one thing. If you want to be seen, 500 meters away, whatever. And I created a prototype and approached Vanishing Ink. And Joshua Jay especially loves this idea, but it's been on the back burner for a long time. And prototypes have been made that haven't really worked to their specifications. They've got high quality Vanishing Ink, and rightly so. And so this item kind of gets brought in occasionally and then it fails, gets brought in occasionally in the first. So maybe one day there will be something out with Vanishing Ink. I would love that. I would also love to do a lecture on a cruise ship, maybe going around Alaska with Garrett Thomas, David Regal, and a few others. So that would be nice if I could get on the retreat doing that. But I don't think that'll happen for a long time. Vanishing Ink, I would love to work with, and hopefully that thing will come out.
They are great.
Yeah. But as for the other releases, obviously I'm open to loads of different companies. But I think for me, Alakazam, I approached first with a Jameson wallet because I know they're great at wallets, so that was a good thing. Penguin have a real kind of toy feel to them, and so Penguin were great with Wando blocks that fitted really well. The Mentalist kind of trick fitted really well with 1914. But we say that, a tape measure trick is not an Alakazam product. And I remember your recent interview with Peter Nardi. It's very true. Their branding has changed. They're open to a lot more things now in terms of their style. So I wouldn't ever say that this is definitely an Alakazam product, because One Card Monty is different to Measure for Measure, and that's different to Jameson wallet. And so they were known very much for their mentalism, but now since Harry's come along, there's a load more different things. So I think you've got to decide, if certain things have a feel or there's company that you really wanted to work with, I think, you just approach them. But sometimes a product does have a feel that really fits a brand. And I think that's what's kind of made me choose certain things in the past. And also I just like the people there as well. I love the team at Penguin. I love the team at 1914. I love the team at Alakazam. And I love the team at Vanishing Ink, and I will continue to love them. And hopefully
they're great. They are great. They are amazing.
Yeah.
No, perfect. And do you have any advice on how to get in with these companies? Like, how did you, is there, because that's the big thing that people ask me on this channel all the time. How do I get on the radar of these various different companies? How do I get them to notice me? It sounds to me from everything that you've said, you just, I don't want to say force yourself onto them. It's like, oh, I've never met Peter Nardi before, and I just shoved this in his face. And
you've got to, really, in a way, you have. I think go to conventions; they're always good. You can kind of have a drink at the bar and kind of accidentally bump into a Joshua Jay or an Andy Gladwin and have a little chat. And just kind of show them things in person. I think it's probably best to go to a convention. It's risky because I was showing Keyring for about a year before it came out with Alakazam. So there's always this risk that if you show other people, it might get stolen and it might go on, you know, someone might release it. So there is that risk. So you could take that risk and show people at conventions, and that will help get your name out to a certain degree. But also go to a convention and show someone in person at the booth. If they're, you know, they're empty at the Blackpool. So I would go down that route. You can, of course, send people a video. I would do both. Send the video. You've got it in writing, a little hard copy there for them to refer to later on. But also go to where they are and, try and perform it in person to them, because it will be more memorable, I think, if you're performing it to them and they get to see the reaction to the crowd, etc. You just need to do it. And then I think once you've got a few releases under your belt, people know kind of, you know, that you've got a record behind you or something, and then they're more likely to release something. Because I think we've chatted in the past, it could be a really good trick, but no one knows who you are yet. And people aren't necessarily willing to take the risk to make 1,000 units of a trick up, you know?
That's one of the things that a lot of people forget, in that these production companies, it's a business to them. It's a big investment to release a trick to market, a big investment. And they need to know that they're going to get some sort of return on their investment. I think part of the thing is convincing them that you're going to be, you know, hey, you know, I'm a good deal. You know, you look at my track. Well, you don't have a problem with that now, I assume, because it's like, hey, look at my track record. Everyone loves me. So, you know, and I mean that sincerely. It's, you know, you stuff.
I think that was especially handy when, because I want to do more lectures, and I've done a fair few now, but I remember emailing loads of magic clubs just saying, look, I'm now doing a lecture, these are all my tricks. So I had all the links to all the tricks that I've released, and the amount of emails I got back saying, oh, we weren't really aware of you, but we've seen that you've released some stuff now that's quite interesting and etc. and so yeah, we would love to have you along. So it's not necessarily that, you know, you do definitely become well known out there, but if you have got a track record of releases in the past, people are more likely to then, you know, take the pun. You know, it's building credibility for you, yeah. Which, yeah, is exactly what you were saying. I think having those, you know, in getting your name out there does make people want to then invest in you, you know, with money in that way. You know, they're willing to take the gamble and release your effect or get you to come and lecture, etc.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And on the subject of that, you know, you brought up the lectures. You're doing a lot more lectures now. And off the back of that, you're starting to release your own tricks. You've got a couple, you've got a lecture exclusive trick that you do, and also the card trick that we kind of alluded to earlier on, that's not a card trick. This is something that you're going to be releasing yourself. What made you go down the route of going down this route? Because, I mean, you know, there's people that will release trick after trick with various different companies and never release their own product and never want to. You're looking at him like, yeah. I couldn't be bothered. Like, you know, I personally, you know, I think I'm the laziest person in magic, really, to be honest, because I get the idea, I work it in, it works, I'm happy with it. I don't want to have the whole, hey, right now I need to work out 15,000 prototypes, now I need to work on the packaging. I just want to hand that off to somebody. Like, here's a finished idea. This is great. It's yours. Go run with it. I don't want the process of marketing and then shipping it out. And no, not
yeah, for me. Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. I think for me, what I have done in the past, so every Measure for Measure gimmick at Alakazam was handmade by me. Every keyring gimmick is handmade by me. So I've been part of that process already, although releasing it through Alakazam. So I'm okay kind of, you know, knowing that process, that for the next couple of weeks, you're going to have no life. You're just going to be in a garage manufacturing something. So I'm already used to that process. I think also, for example, the Dove Magic, this is Dove Magic. And this is Dove Magic, not with a dove, but with Dove shampoo. This, very low cost for me in terms of packaging. You know, it's just a basic box with a sticker on. But all the stuff is in there, you know. But, probably one of the reasons why I made Dove Magic is because I wanted to have all my hygiene products paid for. So that's a good way of me making money out of Dove shampoo and other things. So that's quite good. That's where I started with the aim and then created the trick. So that's something that I make in low quantities and just sell at lectures. So you'll never see that apart from if you see me at a lecture. The new trick, this kind of card trick, is made, I'm venturing into it myself because one of my best friends has a 3D printer and we have hung out so much in the past. He runs a media company called Media Nerd. They do loads of like video, you know, video filming, photography, animation. They have 3D printers and they make all sorts of things. So having him as a friend who loves to make things, like he said to me, oh, by the way, I've made a test run of 68 of these gimmicks for you. Was a lovely surprise to go around his house and realize he's just made them because he loves it. So I've done electrical work for him. He's made these gimmicks for me. And out of all the tricks that I was to release, this one makes the most sense in terms of self-producing because he's got everything available to me. And it's kind of relatively low cost because I've exchanged it for electrical work. I've wired a sauna up for him. He's got a sauna in his back garden. He loves the hot weather. He loves the hot weather from Estonia. So I think this is just something that's landed on my lap in terms of it makes complete sense me releasing it myself. But also I've recently really become good friends with Chris Rawlings, who is known now for releasing quite a few effects by himself. And
yeah, I mean, the latest couple of tricks, Predictable and the key thing. Yeah, the hide decay.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those were exceptional. I liked Chris's stuff anyway, but those two especially were great. And I have noticed it's not going through Penguin. It's not going through, his stuff doesn't go through wholesalers. I think he approaches magic shops and does the legwork and does the graft and goes out there and says, hey, you know, which is, you know, a way to do it. It really is.
Yeah. I think he's just kind of really helped give me the confidence just to do it. And he's told me, you know, certain things I need to buy in order to kind of like help with the releasing. So I bought a new camera and stuff like this that I'm playing with. And he's been very, very helpful during that process. So I've got him to thank really for just kind of, yeah, getting behind me and pushing me over this line to kind of take the risk. But like I say, it's not going to be a massive financial risk for me, this trick, which is good. So I think I wouldn't really make a habit of it because you need the certain contacts. But what I have done, and I think I probably would recommend this to people, is Adam Wilber's got a course on basically releasing a magic trick. I can't remember what he calls it, but have a look on his website because it takes you through all the prototyping stage, you know, whether you know it's going to be a good idea. And he'll help you along that process. And you can message him with advice as well. So he's been helpful as well with this. So yeah, I think the combination of those two people and my friend Bilu, who's making them as we speak, I think it should be fine. But yeah, it's definitely a new thing that I'm venturing into. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm actually on holiday next week and I will be filming the trailer whilst I'm out there to help pay.
When is it going to be released?
I'm hoping I could probably maybe October, November, I think probably And that's given me a lot of time. I could probably release it before then, but I think what I need to do is get a good trailer out there and approach magic shops and get them to tell me how many they want to buy. And then I'll make them per order, as opposed to me making up 2,000 that end up sitting, you know.
Yeah, that's probably the best. Yeah.
So yeah, that's the game plan. So you know, keep a lookout for that. That'll be on my site and also other magic shops as well.
And your site is?
It's ianbaileymagic.com. ianbaileymagic.com. Yeah, it's been a recent site for me. You'll find all my effects on there. As well as a Substack blog as well. So I've got a Substack, which you can find via my website. And so I can send out messages whenever I'm doing a lecture or just general tips, or, you know, if I'm releasing a magic trick, I'll let you know via there as well. So, yeah.
So here's a question. The last couple of years, you've blown up. We've talked about this. You've probably bought out more tricks in the last 2 or 3 years than most people do in an entire career. And they've all been high quality. I don't think any one of them has had a bad review at all by anybody, which is very unlikely and unheard of and unusual, to be honest, especially with the volume that you've bought out over the last 2 years. So what's next? What's left on your magical bucket list that you want to achieve? What goals do you have? Because you're in a really great place, and to be clear, and I say this to a few people on interviews, but it really is very true about you. If you spoke to your average magician, who's been in magic for like 30 or 40 years and they're coming to the end of their career, and you said, hey, by the end of your career, you could have achieved this, you could have released this through Alakazam, this through Alakazam, this through Alakazam, this through Alakazam, this through 1914, this through Penguin, you could have done this and this and this, they would have gone, yeah, I'll take that. But you're not at the end of your career. You're just beginning. You've built up all of this momentum in the last 2 years. So, I mean, the sky's the limit. What's next? What's on your bucket list that you want to achieve?
We'll go back to the Alaska cruise. That would be good.
Josh, Andy, George, I know you listen to this.
There you go. I'm joking. It'll be a long time before that's a thing. But I think I just really enjoy doing lectures at the moment. I really enjoy it. I think it's quite nice and relaxed. You know, you just go there. People kind of know, you know, how things work. So if something doesn't go according to plan, you don't have to panic. It's not like you're being paid to do this big show. I really enjoy hanging out with communities, you know, like magic communities. And so I think probably just more lectures and just coming up with magic tricks. You know, like I say, I've got a full-time job, so I only do something that I love to do, and I'll just continue doing that. But yeah, I think that would be it. Doing lectures, especially at like a convention or something like that, would be amazing. And just continuing to release magic tricks, really. That's as far as my aim goes, really.
Have you done any online lectures in terms of like an Alakazam Academy or a Penguin Live or something like that? And a masterclass of Vanishing Ink. Is that something that you'd want to do?
I would. Peter's asked me in the past about doing kind of some courses and things like that. But the problem I have is that really, in terms of the ideas that I've created, you're looking at them, right? So I don't have a ton of other ideas that, you know, I can kind of just teach in and of itself. So at my lectures, it's not quite a dealer dem. There are things that I teach people to learn as I'm teaching my own effects. There are a few other things that I do teach, you know, that people go away with, and that's it. It's not an official product. But yeah, I think really whenever I have an idea, I end up just going for a releasing option, you know. And because I don't think, because I'm not really into card magic so much, you know, if I was really into card magic or coin magic as a thing in and of itself, there's loads of variations of coin tricks you can teach without an official product that has to be released, you know, and there's loads of tips on a certain move or a way of using a certain move in a card trick that wouldn't ever see the light of day in terms of a product, but a lecture would be a great place to do it. But for me, I think more in terms of products for some reason. It's not an intentional thing. It's not that I'm kind of thinking, right, I need to produce a trick to release. It's just the way it's worked out in the past. So I feel like I would love to do those kind of academies and things, but I don't really have anything to bring to the table apart from like a physical product, really, in that way. You know, I haven't got kind of variations of, you know, like a mentalist principle that can be put into work. You know, I my mind doesn't go that deep, really. So yeah, although I would love to do that, at the moment it's not really something that I could really justify to a company. But we'll see, maybe in the future, you never know.
Okay. Well, I'd love to see that. And have you, do you have any aspirations to lecture at conventions? Like, would you like to lecture at Blackpool or the Session or the London Magic Convention or what, you know, this goes on and on.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would love to do all of them. It's, you know, I think being at the Session Convention for years and years, I think that would be a good place to start, especially now that they do kind of these workshops where they do like just 10 minute lectures, you know, they do five people in an hour or something like that. You know, maybe I could start with that, but I don't think I'm at that stage where my name is out there that much in terms of doing a Blackpool lecture. I think, you know, I've got a way to go yet. So we'll see what happens. I would love to do lectures abroad, but once again, I'm not at that stage in terms of being known yet. And also, we're expecting a baby in December. So I kind of feel like now's not the time to be going abroad so much. Although the Alaska cruise will make an exception for.
You can take a baby on there. Take a baby. Shove it.
There you go. It's got everything on the ship.
Get Josh to look after the baby while you do the lecture. You're good. Golden. Job done. Would.
Yeah, there's nappies on board. There's baby food on board. There's no issues of supply on a cruise ship. So you never know.
No problem at all.
You know, it might not be that good on a helicopter flying over the glaciers, but surely on the boat it should be fine. I can wave the boat.
But also, if you want advice as a parent, you know, take him or her to the actual lecture, because you want to start teaching them magic literally directly from the womb.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you are the person to do that for.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if I can make money out of the child, either by being a gap kid, that model or magic.
Yep.
I was actually seeing Ryland on Instagram just before this, and he's now, it's public knowledge now that he's on AGT, right? And he's there on stage with the, I think he filmed it, AGT logo going across to Ryland, right? Is he kind of going, oh, I'm a bit nervous? No, he's about to show you a card trick. Right, he's incredibly relaxed, and I think it's just amazing what you and him have in common, and the bonds that you've got, and how that's helped him. Yeah, I think it's definitely something to aspire to. It's beautiful.
I joke sometimes, but the relationship that I have with him is amazing. Like, we just sit around doing card tricks, doing magic tricks to each other. It's you know, he genuinely is my best friend, and we just hang out doing magic together. Great.
It's great. Yeah. So if I can have
a relationship, by the way, I never had with my dad. My dad hated magic, and I was an embarrassment to him to the day he died. And he wished I'd get a proper job every single day. I'm like, oh, I've done this, Dad.
Right.
You're going to get a proper job. And I think that's why I've gone so much in the other direction, you know, because I never had that. So,
yeah. So Ryland thinks that what you do is a proper job, and he's aspiring to that. And so it's a nice, it's a good, you've made up for that, for that side.
Yeah. Fixed it one generation on. it's amazing. Now, look, I'm going to ask you one more question, two more questions actually, but they're kind of linked. The first question is, all of those wonderful tricks that you have up there on the shelf, which is your favorite? And I know it's like picking between your kids, not that you've got, you know, it's a difficult thing to do. But is there a particular trick that you kind of go, you know, what's your magnus opus at this point? What's the trick that you kind of go, if nobody's heard of Ian Bailey before and they want to kind of get a flavor as to the type of magic you do, which one?
So I think the favorite, I think really has to be what I have with me the most. You know, what is my kind of go-to? And so keyring for me at the moment is up there. That's probably number one, but also one card Monty, I love. There's certain times where you're at a gig and you just feel like people are a bit closed up to you. You know, they're just trying to work out, you know, trying to figure out something. And it's just this puzzle. You bring out one card Monty, everyone lightens up. You know, they just love it. It's funny. You're not taking yourself too seriously. So I think those two, but And it's not on the shelf. But the next trick that I'm releasing,
I remember you showing me that at the session, and I was bowled over. And that was an early prototype. I know you've improved on it way since then, but just seeing it, it's a classic of magic, stage magic that I do in my stage show.
Right. Yeah. Same. Yeah.
That you've literally taken it and gone, well, let's make it even better and turn it into a close-up trick. That's just the thinking behind it.
Yeah. So I think it is always what you're working on at the time that's your favorite. And so for me, that trick is number one, really. On the shelf, it'll be keyring followed by one card Monty in terms of what I actually do regularly, you know. Mm. Wonder Blocks is like a parlor piece for me, you know, and it still has a weird construction theme. I can work it into my construction theme because, you know, it's building blocks. So I've got that. So I perform that. Measure for Measure, I perform. The Jameson wallet is always in my pocket. So literally everything that I have, I do actually use. And it's good to have that. It's not like it's just a product that I never ever see again, you know.
Well, if you are going to emulate, you know, one of your heroes, Jay Sankey, you have to release so much magic that you literally forget half of it, because there is no way that Jay can remember every single trick he's ever created. It's impossible.
Well, I think actually we should do this as a challenge then. So we're both going to the Midwest Magic Convention in Ireland.
We'll both pick an old trick and say, right, perform this.
Yeah. So we'll do a few of our own, and then we'll sneak in one of his. And if he says it's a terrible trick, we'll bring out the book and we'll say, that's yours. Or if he loves it, then, you know, we can't release it. But there you go. But definitely, I think, you know, I like the fact that with Jay, he is just, you know, he's mastered these few moves and he gets so much out of it. And I think that's what I like, is that I think I mentioned that on the Penguin podcast, was that was my Desert Island Magic book, was his Definitive Sankey.
Mm.
Because when I pick one of those books up, I already know the moves. It's not like I've got to sit down for hours to kind of learn where I'm at, what have I got to do now. I can just take that and I go, right, okay, I know that move. I know I need to make that gimmick card or whatever very quickly, and I'm away, you know? And I like that approach to magic. So, yeah, I think that's definitely inspired me, as well as Greg Wilson and Garrett Thomas. But those kind of combinations of the three is really what's made my product become what they are, I think.
Well, if you're going to be inspired by three people, Garrett Thomas, Jay Sankey, and Greg Wilson are a good three to two.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, it's amazing. Before we go, I said it was linked. Could you take any one of those off the shelf and perform it for me? I don't get people coming on this show very often and performing magic, which is crazy as it's taught magic. So,
yeah. Okay, well, I'm gonna surprise you with this. Okay, okay. We're gonna go with let's go with this. So I've actually got a coffee from before. This is sponsored by the Wild Bean Cafe here.
Okay.
I've got this,
mm-hmm.
And I've also got these cards. All right. So let me just bring in this light just so you can see. If I bring this up to the camera, just so you can see what's going on here. So. Hopefully you can see this. You'll see every single card has, bring it over here. Can you see that?
Yes, that's coming to focus, yes.
There we go. Yeah, you can see that. So yes. There's a copy of the month on every single card. So you've got coffee, mocha, you've got
Americano.
I'm having to read it back.
Cappuccino, cordato, cappuccino. Yeah, macchiato, they're all the espresso. Yeah.
There's quite a few.
Filter coffee, flat white, my God, so many different options. Okay. Yeah.
What I'll do is I will just go like, I will riffle the cards, you say stop, and then we'll look at whatever one you've cut to. So don't tell me what, but I'll riffle them like this.
Stop. So.
Happy there? Yeah?
Yeah, I'm happy. Yeah, I'm very happy.
Look at whatever, can you see that? Is it in focus?
I've got it. Yeah, I can see it. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the drink that I want you to think of, right? Now, I'm going to ask you two questions. I'm going to guess what this drink is. Very, very easy, right? So let's go with this. So what environment are you in as you drink this drink?
I'm kind of inside in the coffee shop.
So you're inside in the coffee shop. Okay, right. So it might be coffee related.
Mm.
on a coffee loyalty card, it should be.
It should be, shouldn't it?
So you've decided to sit indoors. I'm guessing you're sat with someone. If you could sit with any celebrity, let's go with this. If you could sit with any celebrity in the world, who would you drink this drink with?
My God.
Peter Nardi doesn't count.
That's who I was going to go for. I can't remember his name, but I'd really like to meet him. The guy that plays Barney on How I Met Your Mother. The guy that's a magician as well.
I know who you mean.
Oh, my gosh. Hilarious guy. I'm making this...
he's busy that day. Who else are you going to go with?
Here we go. Hang on, I've got it. Neil Patrick Harris. There you go, Neil Patrick Harris.
Okay, good. Okay, so you're drinking a drink with Neil Patrick Harris. Just imagine sipping the drink. Can you hold the mug where you are? Can you kind of hold it in shot and just take a little sip? Okay, I'm getting this. Right, okay, let's go for this. Right, okay, I'm gonna place this down on the table over here. Okay, you can see that napkin.
Yeah, I can see it, yeah, Tim View.
For the first time, what was the drink that you were thinking of?
It was cappuccino.
Cappuccino. Okay, let me show you what I've written. No questions asked apart from those two. Cappuccino. Ooh,
cappuccino.
And there's about 20 or 30 drinks in there. So if you've chosen a mocha, I would have got that as well. But there is something weird because I'm not just good at guessing drinks. I'm good at guessing celebrities, right? And I actually, when I showed you the Wild Bean Cafe, this isn't from the Wild, well, it is from the Wild Bean Cafe, but it's not my drink. This, believe it or not, I have just finished, before I did this Zoom, I was with Neil Patrick Harris. Neil Patrick, what I call him. He likes that. And this is actually his mug. And so I haven't actually got it written on the side of the cup. Okay, you would see that from the Zoom, but I don't know if you can see underneath. Can you see Neil Patrick written?
Mate, you just kicked me in the teeth.
and there we go. That's the effect. That
is brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Cheers. So that's actually a combination of Cafe Hero, so the final stage of Cafe Hero, with my first ever release of Roasted. And over Zoom, that works really well. It works very well in person at the coffee shop as well. But it's a great thing to do, you know, over Zoom.
That's brilliant. That's really, really. I've never seen Roasted.
Okay, nice.
I'm gonna go and buy it from Penguin right now. Is it a download? I'm getting it this second.
Yeah.
Because I love Cafe Hero, as you know, and I thought you were just doing Cafe Hero there, and then. Wow, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. So that's how I use them both together. And it's very good. Because the original Roasted trick used the your drink gag. So you would think of a drink and I would guess what it is. But on the napkin, it would just have the words your drink written on there. You know, you wouldn't actually be able to guess the drink. But with Cafe Hero leading into that, you've not only guessed a freely thought of drink, you know, from a stack of 30 loyalty cards, but it could be any celebrity, it could be a friend's name, it could be a PIN number, it could be a place name, it could be anything. But Roasted, I love because it's, you know, you kind of think, all right, okay, where are people's names being written on a day-to-day basis? And obviously the coffee shop, that's where it's happening. And so, that's kind of what inspired that routine. So there we go. Didn't think that was going to happen, did you? I thought I was going to
That completely got me.
It's
not like that moment where you see a trick and you get to the point where you think you see where it's going and you're just like, no. As a magician, you're kind of like, no, how could this even be possible? No. And then it is. That was great. That was brilliant. That was awesome. Now I need to go and get roasted, which sounds terrible, but...
It does. We have deep questions to thank for the name. So there you go.
Right. Clever guy. Yeah. Right. Okay. So if people want to jump on your mailing list, would they go over to your website?
Yeah. So Ian is spelled IAIN. So it's a Scottish way. So ianbaileymagic.com. You can go on there. I have free shipping on my website to everyone in the UK. So you can go there. You can buy any of my tricks on there. And then also on the at the bottom, there's a link to my Substack. So yeah, so that's where you'll then receive a little notice in your email, you know, when I've written something up. So yeah, so that's probably the best way of keeping in touch. And yeah, if there's any lecturers where, you know, kind of people are magic clubs out there, I'd love to do a lecture as well. So get in touch with me for that as well.
That's amazing. So go and check you out if you need a lecturer. Go and check you out if you want to buy any of Ian's products, because that way you're supporting the creator as well, which is always a really nice thing to do. Yeah. And are you going to be making an appearance at any conventions between now and the end of the year? We've got a few coming up.
Yes. As mentioned, I'll be at the Midwest convention because Mr. Sankey's going to be there, and I thought I'd jump on that opportunity again. So I'm going to go there, and that'd be a great time to have for us both to hang out as well. So yeah, I look forward to seeing you there, right?
Yeah.
And also I'll be there at the London Magic Convention as well. So I'm going to be at that convention as well. Whether I do Blackpool or the session this year is going to be difficult because of the baby arriving in December. We'll see what happens.
Mm.
I kind of feel like the session, I might be able to do a day at the session, so I might come and do a day pass there. Blackpool, depending on how things go, we'll see, but I would love to have a stand at Blackpool and sell this new trick that I'm coming out with. You know, it'd be good.
That'd be a really good idea.
Yeah, so we'll see how
it goes. What, if you sold that at Blackpool and you debuted it at Blackpool, you're gonna have people biting your hand off for it.
Mm.
That had genuinely, I turned around to James Keatley this year and I was like, Bitcoin is probably going to be the trick of the convention. It's the one every, and he sold out, you know, like, honestly, I think that if you bought that out at Blackpool, you'd sell out. However many you take, you'd sell out.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. Well, let's hope that happens. So, yeah, there'll be the conventions that I'll be at.
Brilliant stuff. Well, I hope that I will see you there, but I will definitely see you at the London Magic Convention. I'll be there as well.
So, because
they're right near each other, aren't they? London Magic Convention and the Midwest, they're both in November. So it's going to be
There's not much space between them. So we'll be magicked out, I'm sure.
It's going to be a busy November. It's going to be a busy November, definitely. But Ian, seriously, thank you so much for jumping on the channel. You have had an incredible journey through magic. The impact that you've had on the industry in the last couple of years has definitely been massive. And I know that there's going to be a ton of other things coming out from you in the next year or two. I just know there are, because you seem to have that brain where you just can't stop yourself. You know, you're just like, I'm going to do this. So I can't wait to see what else you're coming up with in the future.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on here. You know, it's been great. I think it's my third appearance on your YouTube. And
I can't stop having you on here, mate. Like, you are more than welcome to be on here anytime you want to be.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. But no, thank you very much for your support as well. You've been lovely with the effects. You've taken time to do reviews on them. Like I've said to you in the past, it's terrifying when you see your name on YouTube with the word review next to it. You panic, you think, oh no, is it going to work out okay? But you've been very supportive, so thank you for doing that. Thank you for taking the time and having me on a longer episode as well. And also all the stuff that you're putting out as well is very, very beneficial, and it's helping me and it's helping a lot of people. So
thanks.
And return the thanks to you as well.
You're more than welcome. Thank you so much. And I want everybody who's watching this to do me a favor, leave a comment down below, let Ian know what you thought. If you haven't seen any of Ian's stuff, go and check it out. Go and check out his website. The link is going to be in the description down below. Go and sign up for his Substack and buy everything he's ever bought out, because all of it is good. And if you have a society that you're a member of and they want a really great, fresh lecturer, then go and get the person that books the lecturers to go and speak to Ian. Because he's just a really nice guy and will do an incredible lecture. So, Ian, thank you so much for joining me. I will see you again soon. But yeah, my friend, you rock.
Thank you. You too. See you soon.
See you soon. Guys, on behalf of Ian, we will see you again soon. Thank you so much for watching. On behalf of Ian, my name's Craig from Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic podcast.